see that Councilmember Barnidge is here. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday, May 11th edition of the City Council meeting and our special meeting here at 5 p.m. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George?
Here.
Councilmember Storton?
Here.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Here.
Mayor Reed Ressam?
Here. Would you please join me in the flag salute? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We have two items on closed session tonight, so I'm going to ask the city attorney to announce those, and then I will open up public comment. So go ahead, Mr. Carmel.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The council is about to adjourn to closed session for a conference with its labor negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6 to discuss the status of negotiations with both SEIU and the AGPOA. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So at this time, I will open up public comment and check with AGP and see if there's anyone who'd like to comment on these two items.
If you would like to speak on this, please raise your hand. All right, Madam Mayor, it looks like we don't have any raised hands.
Thank you so much. So I will close public comment and we will adjourn to closed session and we will come back to this regular session and reconvene at 6 p.m. Thank you so much, everyone. We'll see you in just a couple minutes. Welcome back. This is reconvening our special meeting that started at 5 o'clock. So we have our call to order here again at 6 p.m. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George?
Here.
Councilmember Storton?
Here.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Here.
Mayor Ray Ressam?
Here. Would you please join me in a moment of reflection as we ponder the sad officer-involved shooting in San Luis Obispo. Thank you. This evening, our flag salute is going to be done by Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mayor. If everyone would join me for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Item 5 is agenda review. Is there anything that anyone would like to change order on this evening? Okay, hearing none, we'll proceed as published. Item 5A, closed session announcements. I will send this over to City Attorney Carmel.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The council just finished a closed session for a conference with labor negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6, where it discussed the status of negotiations with both SEIU and AGPOA. There's no formal action to report. Additionally, at the regular meeting of April 27th, 2021, the council held the same closed session under the same code section, and there's nothing to report from that closed session either. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We have no items under 5B today, so we shall skip that, and that takes us right into special presentations. Item 6A is our update, our regular update regarding countywide COVID-19 efforts, and I'll send this over to City Manager McDonald.
Good evening, everybody. Good to see you. Just a few items to related to COVID-19. One is to just let everybody know and reiterate that we have reopened City Hall to the public on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So today was our first day open. Full success, no issues there. And so we're just really excited to be able to see people again at our City Hall. When folks come in, you'll see perimeter project that we put in place for security and as a COVID precaution. We are requiring masks to be worn to enter the building and have a little bit of capacity limitations just to make sure everybody's safe, but everything's been going really smoothly so far. So we're just really excited to be able to take that step toward normalcy. Wanted to let everybody know as well, the county announced last week that they plan to close their vaccine clinics beginning June 4th. So it's been a very successful process, I believe, through those clinics, getting the vaccines out to our public. And so they're looking at trying to ramp that down at the beginning of June. And then finally, I'd like to just share my screen with a flyer that the county announced as well regarding an event that's occurring tomorrow night. It is an event hosted by the NAACP in concert with Race Matters Slow. It's a Zoom discussion regarding the vaccinations, and it's an opportunity for folks to ask questions of medical professionals if they have any questions or concerns. This flyer is up here for folks to take a look at, and it is available to the public. So that's about it for me related to COVID.
Let's see if the council has any questions. Councilmember Barnage, any questions?
Whitney, I just wanted to know if we could share that flyer on our social media. We might have already, because I've shared it before. I just don't know where I got it. So if we haven't, if we could do that.
Sure thing. Yeah.
Councilmember George, any questions?
I have no questions. Thank you for the report.
Councilmember Storton?
I have none. Thank you, Whitney.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
No questions. Thank you.
All right. Let's open this up to public comment and see if the public has any questions. I'll turn it over to AGP.
If anyone would like to make a comment on this, please raise your hand using the raised hand button. If you are calling in by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you so much. So I'll close public comment, and that is just a regular report without any action to be taken. So we'll move on to item 6B, and this is our city manager's report.
Thank you. I've got a few items, small handful to just highlight for everybody this evening. One is to remind everyone that our activity guide for the summer was published by our recreation department last week. It is available on our website. It the hard copy includes events occurring not only in our city, but also in Grover Beach and Pismo Beach. And so we're happy to be able to provide that that resource for our communities. So just urging everybody to take a look. Also, just wanted to let everyone know as well that the U.S. Treasury did release some additional guidance related to the American Rescue Plan Act funding. I know we have a lot of questions. I think a lot of others have a lot of questions about how that funding can be used, how reporting needs to be done, and all the ins and outs of that funding source. So it's not a small document, so we are taking some time to wade through it. We don't anticipate that funding is going to be included as part of our upcoming budget because it's still uncertain. We need a lot more information, plus we need the funding. So that's going to be coming forward separately with a more detailed analysis. So just wanted to let everybody know we are looking into that. And that brings me to our last just update item. We had hoped to bring forward a draft proposed budget for everybody on the 25th. Due to a number of issues, we need to push that back. So we're now looking at June 8th. That will still give us an additional council meeting date at the end of June if we need to come back for any revisions and a final adoption of that budget before the beginning of the next fiscal year. So just wanted to let everybody know that that's going to be coming forward at the first meeting in June. So that's it from me this evening.
Again, let me check in with the council and see if they have any questions. Councilmember Storton.
No, thank you.
Councilmember George.
No, thank you. No questions.
Councilmember Barnage. Mayor Pro Tem. All right, let's open it up to the public then and see if anyone has questions on item 6B, the city manager's report. Again, I'll turn it over to AGP.
If you would like to speak on this, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you very much. This takes us to item 6C, and please welcome the wife of our dearly departed Beau Pryor. Sean Pryor is here this evening, and I'm going to forward to the proclamation that we will be presenting to her tonight. So if you could bring her into the meeting, that would be great. And here we are. This is a proclamation posthumously honoring Beau David Pryor, retired Arroyo Grande Police Chief. Whereas the Arroyo Grande community mourns the loss of former Arroyo Grande Police Chief Beau Pryor, who passed away on April 21st, 2020. And whereas Beau was born on May 28, 1970 in Atascadero and grew up here on the Central Coast. And whereas in 1994, Beau began a successful 28-year career with the City of Arroyo Grande Police Department. During his tenure, Beau started as a reserve police officer and was promoted up through the ranks to the positions of police officer, senior police officer, sergeant, and commander until accepting the position as chief of police in 2017. He also held a variety of specialized assignments, including motorcycle traffic officer, field training officer, member of the special response team, property crimes detective, and detective sergeant. And whereas in 1998, Beau married the love of his life, Sean, and they were blessed with two daughters, Alexis and Caitlin, whom he affectionately referred to as his girls. And whereas Beau valued spending time with his family and friends and enjoyed activities such as motorcycle riding, mountain bike riding, surfing, camping, and woodworking. And whereas in July 2020, Beau retired as chief of police from the Arroyo Grande Police Department. Excuse me, I moved my thing. Hold on. I'm sorry. And after retirement, Beau's motto was, "Every day is a Saturday." And whereas Beau's legacy will never be forgotten, as chief of police, he left an indelible mark on the city of Arroyo Grande, demonstrating to everyone what being an outstanding community leader looks like. More than outstanding leader, he was a great friend who inspired everyone he worked with and talked to. Beau was a dedicated public servant, devoted to his family, committed to making our world safer, more just, and equitable. And whereas Beau will be forever remembered for the impact he had on the community of Arroyo Grande, now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Karen Ray Russom, mayor of the city of Arroyo Grande, posthumously honor Beau David Pryor, husband, father, chief, and friend. I will say that the last time the first time we texted after he was chief, I told him that he would always be chief to me, and it would be so hard for me to call him Beau. And that was very, very difficult for me to read, and I apologize for messing up the scroll. So at this time, I'd like to invite his wife, Sean Pryor, to speak. Is she here, Chief?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to be saying a few words on behalf of the Pryor family. So on behalf of Sean, Alexis, Caitlin Pryor, they would like to thank the Arroyo Grande Police Department, the city staff, the council, and the mayor, and all the wonderful members of this community for all the support that they have seen over these past 2.5 weeks. They appreciate everyone's prayers and well wishes and are honored to accept this proclamation this evening. Again, they just wanted to extend that appreciation out to everyone that has been by their side during these past few weeks. And I'm honored to be here tonight to speak on their behalf.
I would imagine that the council would have things to say, so I'll go ahead and turn it over to the council. Councilmember George, do you have any words?
I can't believe it's only been 2.5 weeks. I feel like it's been a lifetime. The mark that the chief left on my heart is something that I will never forget. He was very kind and very gentle, and as a new council member, he was very reassuring, and he made me feel safe, and he made our community feel safe, and his loss is felt deeply and greatly, and I appreciate the proclamation today. Thank you.
Councilmember Barnage?
Thank you, Mayor. As I've said in the past, in the last couple weeks, that whenever I talked to Bo, Chief Pryor, he was just someone who would calm you down instantly. And I'm sure he was that to his family and his friends, but to a council member who had endless questions sometimes and needed reassuring, every time I got off the phone with him, I just felt so much better. He was a great police chief. He was a wonderful employee. He was an asset to our city. And I know he was an amazing dad and a husband. He's just, as Councilmember George said, he's really left an amazing, indelible mark on our city. And I know the community has felt that. And I'd say more, but it's harder for me to talk about it publicly. So thank you.
Councilmember Storton.
Thank you, Mayor. I had the fortune of working with Bo as a police officer in San Luis and here in Rio Grande for over 2 decades. And I had the opportunity to work with him a number of times professionally and just found him to be an exceptional police officer and human being and somebody that you would want to represent in your community. But it really wasn't until I got into council here that I got to meet with him on more occasions as the police chief and just found what an exceptional leader, a man with integrity and compassion, and we were so fortunate to have him with us in that position. He will be missed, and just want to send my love to Sean and the family and say thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to give my condolences, Sean, to you and your family, and just say that my time with Chief Pryor was full of what everyone said, just the fact that he was a great police chief and just a good man in general, and everybody knew that, and he'll be missed.
And Sean, I don't know, there are, just aren't words, but the one thing I'll add on behalf of the organization is we are a better organization because of him. And not just because he was such a good man, but because he left us with a succession of great employees that are the future of this department that will carry us forward for decades. And his presence will be here long, long, long after these tears pass. So thank you for sharing him with us and for sacrificing all the time that you did on behalf of the community. I just, I can't express to you enough how saddened I am that you personally got shortchanged in this deal. And I'm really sorry for that. So we all miss him and we wish you the very, very best. So, AGP, rescue me and send it to public comment, please.
Okay, if anyone would like to make a comment on this, please raise your hand. If you're calling in by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you so much. So at this time, I will close public comment and we will move on to our next item, which is an honorary proclamation declaring the month of May 2021 as Asian American and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Heritage Month. Whereas Asian American and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Heritage Month recognizes the history and achievements of Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders, AANHPIs, across our nation. And whereas Asian Americans and Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders make our nation, state, and city more vibrant through diversity of cultures, languages, and religions. The American story as we know it would be impossible without the strength, contributions, and legacies of AANHPIs who have helped build and unite this country in each successive generation. And whereas we also celebrate and honor the invaluable contributions the AANHPI communities have made to our national and local culture and the arts, law, science, and technology, sports, and public service, including the courageous AANHPIs who have served on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic as healthcare providers, first responders, teachers, and other essential workers. And whereas in spite of the strength shown and successes achieved, the American dream remains out of reach for far too many AANHPI families. AANHPI communities face systemic barriers to economic justice, health equity, educational attainment, and personal safety. And whereas we recognize the heightened fear felt by many Asian American communities in the wake of increasing rates of anti-Asian harassment and violence during the COVID-19 pandemic and the increasingly observable layers of hate now directed toward women and elders of Asian descent in particular. And whereas acts of anti-Asian bias are wrong, they are un-American and they must stop. And whereas Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders make our nation and our community stronger. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Karen Ray Russom, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, do hereby proclaim May 2021 as Asian American and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Heritage Month and call upon the citizens of Arroyo Grande to learn more about the history of Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders. And at this time, I'm going to turn this over to our city manager, Whitney McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just wanted to say a couple words. We don't have any particular group here this evening to accept this proclamation. And so I just wanted to mention that we're really happy to be able to bring something forward to recognize this month. It's just one part of our efforts to increasingly work toward additional diversity, equity, and inclusion within our community and our organization. And it's especially important for us to bring this forward at this time, I think, as mentioned in the proclamation, that there has been an increase in hate crimes being experienced by our Asian American and Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander communities. And so we want to stand in solidarity with the members of our community who are suffering through that right now and let them know we're here with you and for you. And we're here to support. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Let me check in with the council and see if the council has anything to say. Councilmember Storton?
No, I thank you for putting this proclamation together. I think anytime we can make to allow others to learn more about not only ourselves and what we can do, but the thoughts and feelings of others. I think that's very noble and important. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Councilmember George?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate this proclamation. I appreciate the awareness that needs to be made in regards to recent hate crimes and aggression and anger towards the Asian population. It is not lost amongst my family and myself. We struggle with it every day. My mom lives with us right now and she has trouble hearing and my dad has trouble hearing. And so everything they do is on speakerphone. And so I get to hear all of their conversations with all of their friends. And, you know, they're just scared. And it's sad to see that the life that they have lived prior to coming to America, and then coming to America to escape war and to find peace, and working so hard to build a life and a family and a future here, to end their years, because they're mainly the elderly, in fear, is sad. And I'm just sad for them. I'm sad for our community, and I appreciate this proclamation because we need the awareness, and we as a minority, especially Asians, we get overlooked a lot because we're not, I don't know if we're just not local enough, or if we just don't, I don't know, but we get overlooked a lot, and right now we shouldn't be overlooked. And so I ask you, if you have Asian friends, please check in on them, because they may look okay, but they're probably not. So thank you.
Thank you for that. Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate the proclamation, Whitney, and I appreciate my colleagues' comments. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Thank you, Mayor. I support the proclamation. I certainly support the Asian American and Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander community, and so glad that we have representation on our council. So thank you, Councilmember George, for serving and for pushing for that inclusion and diversity that we need in our community.
Thank you. And of course, I echo the rest of the council, and I will go ahead and open up public comment at this time and turn it over to AGP.
If you would like to speak on this item, please raise your hand. We have one speaker, Joe Benson. Joe, please unmute yourself and make your comments. Joe Benson, you are still muted. Joe Benson, if you wanted to make a comment on this, please unmute yourself.
Hi, I'm sorry. I was hoping to comment during general comment, not on this.
Okay, we'll hold you back until the next item. Thank you so much.
Okay, there was no other raised hands for this.
Okay, thank you so much. So at this time, I will close public comment, and we will go on to item 6E. This is our recognition of COVID safety superstars. And tonight we will have both Jocelyn Brennan, the president and CEO of the chamber, and our city manager, Whitney McDonald, to present this item.
Good evening. Thank you. Maybe I'll jump in while Jocelyn gets added. I have a really very short little screen to share with you identifying our COVID safety superstars. So I just wanted to pull this up for everyone to see. So congratulations to quite an amazing list of our local businesses. We have 20 businesses total here this evening to recognize. I'll just run through them and then Jocelyn is here as well to help with these presentations. So Capslow's Center for Health and Prevention, Routee's Farms, Arroyo Grande Recreation Services Children in Motion, this is our child care program, the Hair Saloon and Spa, the Golden Moon Restaurant, Trader Joe's, Sweet Pea Bakery, Massage Envy, Sunset North Car Wash, Zumba with Heidi Mangiardi, Ember Restaurant, Timber Winery, Tribe Coffee House, Planet Fitness, Arroyo Grande Meat Company, Mule Bakery, Miner's Ace Hardware, Heritage Salon, the Achievement House Thrift Store, and the Starbucks at Oak Park and West Branch Street. Again, I guess it would be helpful if I reminded, summarize what this means. So asked folks to nominate businesses who had shown really exceptional COVID safety protocols and helped people feel safe over the last several months, strike that year, plus a month or two, and just went above and beyond and making sure that all the COVID protocols were being followed. We wanted to take an opportunity to really mention these businesses and congratulate them and celebrate their hard work over the last really challenging, difficult year. So special thanks to Jocelyn Brennan of the South County Chambers of Commerce. She really facilitated, got all of the nominations from the public, facilitated a review to make sure that all these folks and businesses really did stand out in that way. And then also wanted to mention a thank you, special thank you to Senator John Laird, who is our state senator, who provided some additional certifications for us to provide to our businesses as an extra added layer of celebration. So congratulations to all of our superstars, and we're here to really celebrate you and all the work you've done over the last year with the pandemic. So from here, that's it from me. And I don't know if Jocelyn would like to say a few words.
Sure. Thanks, Whitney. I just wanted to take a moment to thank the council for creating this program. As you are aware, the businesses have gone through one of the toughest years any business owner could expect to go through. And so the city's recognition of all their efforts that they took to comply with the safety guidelines, implement personal protective equipment, adjust their operations and capacities is really appreciated. Next week, the Chamber and the Rio Grande Business Committee will deliver a letter to each of the businesses along with a window decal that will recognize these businesses as COVID safety superstars, along with the certificates from the council and Senator Laird. So again, congratulations to the businesses for their commitment to safety, to their employees, their customers, and to the community. And also a big thank you to the council for thinking of this special recognition program, and also for the business assistance grants and scholarships. I wanna say a special thank you to Councilmember Barnidge and the others who were on the review panel for those that were selected. And I thought I would just read a quick email from one of the businesses. I'm not sure if any of them are able to attend tonight, but we did let them know about this evening. But we had an email today from Heidi Mangiardi, the owner instructor of Zumba with Heidi. And she says, thank you very much for the recognition as a COVID safety superstar. I will be unable to attend the meeting tonight. I will be teaching class during that time. However, I would greatly appreciate it if you could read this comment into the record. I'd like to thank the city and the community for this recognition of Zumba with Heidi as a COVID safety superstar. The Rio Grande Parks and Rec Department has been a pivotal force in getting our community moving again in a safe and compliant manner. And our local Zumba community has been diligent about maintaining safe social distancing and following required mask regulations in our outdoor fitness classes. We're grateful for all the support in keeping our community healthy. So thank you, Council, again, for this program. It's been a lot of fun.
So thank you so much for that. At this time, I'm sure that the council will have plenty to say. So I'm going to go ahead and go straight to the public, and then we'll come back around to the council for comment. So let's turn this over to AGP and see if anyone would like to make public comment.
If you would like to comment on this item, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. So let's bring this back around to the council, and let's begin with Councilmember Barnidge.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to congratulate all the COVID safety superstars. You know, I'm sure people know, but I just want to reiterate that this isn't like, you know, an AYSO trophy. Everyone's not going to get one, because we know that the community knows how hard these superstars were, and also other businesses that perhaps weren't nominated, how hard it was to constantly pivot and come up with new ideas to try to keep your business in business and how to keep us safe. And this was an amazing feat for all of you that are being awarded the superstar recognition. And it just I just can't say thank you enough to these businesses and the other ones as well that really went out of their way to stay in business and keep us with our vegetables and our coffee and our groceries and getting our hair done. And this is, you know, it's a really big deal. So I hope you have that little sticker and you put it up your window and you display it with pride, because we really appreciate you. We recognize you. The community did. We bragged about you. And I know the community bragged about you. So it's a big deal. So, you know, post it all over social media and talk all about how amazing you are. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Storton, any questions?
Oh, no questions, just a quick comment. Just we've been living through a time where it could easily become negative and people are unfortunately difficult with one another. But when you have a program like this and you have people just step up because it's kind and compassionate and it's just the right thing to do, it's incredible that these businesses were the ones that rose to the top. And I know there were others out there that worked hard as well. But just thank you to all of them for keeping us safe.
Councilmember George, any comments?
I just want to do jazz hands, like our superstars. So congratulations to all of our superstars. Thank you so much for keeping our community safe and going. And I'm so grateful that you are part of our business community and you're being recognized for your diligence and your public safety. And I'm just grateful for you and keep it up. Thank you so much. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to say, thank you and congratulations and for really demonstrating leadership. Obviously, it's been a really difficult time and that's what you've shown and other businesses I'm sure followed. And thanks to the community for participating in the program and for the chamber and Councilmember Barnich. And also I want to commend the mayor for coming up with a great idea. It's really nice that we could focus on the positive and not the negative. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And that does speak to what I wanted to say, which was, all of us spent a lot of time in the last year online because we weren't seeing each other in public. And online can be a scary place. And online can be a very negative place. And I saw a lot of negativity. And that is not the zeitgeist of Arroyo Grande. That is not the leadership that this council brings forward. And so that's what this was born of, which is it's really easy to focus on what was going wrong in the last year. Holy cow, that was easy to do, wasn't it? But we really wanted to honor those businesses who didn't just comply. You're supposed to comply. These are businesses that did more than supposed to. These are businesses that not only did what they were supposed to, but went above and beyond and gladly because they wanted to keep us safe and they wanted to really, again, that word leadership comes forward. So I'm so excited for that. I'm excited that the council in its whole has an eye towards the positive and an eye towards support of these businesses that really did go above and beyond. And I'll give my special thanks to Councilmember Barnich because I'm really good at coming up with programs. She came up with the name and that was a really good one. And so I hope that like you all said, that they display that you, the businesses display those things that may seem like they're just a little piece of paper or just a little sticker. They're not. They're real and they're important. And we stand by you and we support you and we want to say thank you. So with that, let us move forward to item 7. This is community comments and suggestions. This is the chance for the public to comment and bring items to the attention of this council that are not on tonight's agenda. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes and address the council as a whole. I will turn this over to AGP to administer public comment.
Okay, our first commenter will be Joe Benson. If anybody else would like to comment, please raise your hand.
Hi, thank you. Good evening, Madam Mayor and City Council members. My name is Joe Benson. I live in San Luis Obispo, and I'm here tonight in my capacity as the 2021 president of the County Bar Association. After a one-year delay due to COVID-19 restrictions, a special traveling exhibit from the Library of Congress has arrived here in San Luis Obispo County. This exhibit commemorates the centennial anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which guaranteed and protected women's constitutional right to vote. As I think you would all agree, the only thing better than celebrating
The 100-year anniversary of a historical event is to celebrate the 101st anniversary. The exhibit is titled 100 Years After the 19th Amendment, Their Legacy and Our Future. It's a 7-banner freestanding exhibit which features historic photos and artifacts, details the story of the battle for ratification, highlights key moments in the suffrage movement, identifies issues of gender equality that remain today, and celebrates Black, Indigenous, Latina, and Asian American suffragists. This exhibit was curated by the Library of Congress and received a 2019 GDUSA American Graphic Design Award. The Bar Association was able to obtain this exhibit in partnership with the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County, the San Luis Obispo College of Law, the Women Lawyers Association of San Luis Obispo County, and two private donors. The exhibit is on display now at the San Luis Obispo County Public Library. That's at 995 Palm Street in SLO, and will be there until September 18th before departing to its next city. It's free to view and open to the public. I hope you all will help us get the word out in our community about this great exhibit. We're especially hopeful that educators and students will be provided an opportunity to view it and learn from it. Thank you for your time and attention.
The next speaker will be Sean Perry, followed by David Baldwin.
Hello, Mayor and council members. Thank you for the opportunity to address the local hire part of your upcoming wastewater project. I help to represent the 300 men and women of the IBW 639. It is the IBW and NECA, the National Electrical Contractors Association partnership, that funds and administers our own electrical apprenticeship program. To be clear, it is all self-financed, and it is the only 5-year apprenticeship program for electricians in the county. There are nearly 50 young men and women currently training to become journeymen. There are nearly 30 young men and women in our pre-apprenticeship program. If you decide that your project should guarantee that local men and women should be on this project, then that would guarantee that another opportunity for young people in this community to learn a skilled trade. The SLO wastewater project that's going on right now is the proof you need that a CWA does work as it was intended. It's 80% of the skilled trades on that project are the people that live here right now. It bears repeating that taxpayers do not pay more for a CWA, but I always hear that as a reason not to do so. But nobody has ever explained to me how or why a CWA agreement costs more for any of these projects. I suppose if I really think about it, the only added cost is hiring a compliance officer to ensure that local workers are indeed on your project. But what would that cost be? And is that even a full-time job? But the good news is that we at the IBW are already administering that compliance, and it's for no added cost. So if I could ever hear specifically what costs more, I would love to know. And lastly, it bears repeating that a CWA does not discriminate against any contractor who would like to work your project. A CWA is simply a guarantee, an insurance policy. And I love the fact that the mayor said that the last time I heard her speak about this. It's a guarantee that local men and women will work on this project, an insurance policy that guarantees no work stoppages and any costly change orders. So I thank you for your time. Thank you.
The next speaker is David Baldwin, followed by Joshua Medrano.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. I'm David Baldwin. I'm the business manager for the plumbers and pipe fitters here in San Luis Obispo County. I wanted to just take a few minutes. That's why I jumped on tonight. I'd heard some comments in recent days critical of community workforce agreements, and just kind of wanted to point a few things out. We've had a small group of Sacramento lobbyists who've attempted to sway the opinions of local folks in the past. I bring a couple things to mind. We have right here in town, you heard Sean Perry just now talking about, we have about 80% local hire on the SLO-WRF project right now, right here in San Luis Obispo. We've also got the South Sand project now that has a community workforce agreement, and I imagine we'll see the same kind of success there. In contrast, the Morro Bay Wharf project, another very large wastewater project, chose not to use community workforce agreement. And some of these same out-of-town lobbyist folks said that you won't get anybody to bid your project if you do this, and some other detrimental things. Well, if you look at what actually happened, San Luis Obispo and South San were able to qualify numerous quality bidders to bid their projects, whereas the Morro Bay Wharf was only able to get two. And their project came in millions over the engineer's estimates. So we know these agreements work. We know that local folks want to work on these projects. And right now, for instance, here at the Plumbers and Pipefitters, this month we'll be opening up our apprenticeship program to testing and interviews for new local folks that would like to begin a career in the skilled trades. And there's many other programs like that also going on here with the other craft union apprenticeship programs. And these are our local folks. We want them working on our local jobs. These are those good middle wage jobs that we always talk about being so important to the overall health of our communities, and especially our working class communities like Arroyo Grande. So I just want to encourage you to keep your eye on the ball. Appreciate the conversations you've had and the positions you've taken to support local workers. And we look forward to keeping as many local folks working as we can. Thank you.
The last speaker is Joshua Medrano.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and council members. My name is Joshua Medrano, the Tri-Counties Building and Construction Trades Council of San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura Counties, Executive Secretary and Treasurer. And I am here tonight to speak about community workforce agreements and echo what Sean Perry of the IBEW, as well as David Baldwin of the UA, have previously made comments on. The Building and Construction Trades Council, well, we represent hundreds of apprentices and workers in San Luis Obispo County and thousands of apprentices and workers in Santa Barbara counties, as well as Ventura, local electricians, sheet metal workers, plumbers and pipe fitters, heavy equipment operators and cement masons who will get a chance to work on the South Sanitation Redundancy Project because of the Community Workforce Agreement. I want to thank you. We want to thank you collectively as a council for supporting a CWA on the Central Coast Blue Project so that those same local apprentices and workers can work on the Central Coast Blue Project. They can work from home. The only purpose of the CWA is to ensure that tax dollars stay local and that they have a workforce that is guaranteed for that project. Like those apprentices and workers that you represent, well, they get a chance to work on the locally funded project, which, by the way, their tax dollars are paying for. Without a CWA, most, if not all, the contractors on a project like the Central Coast Blue will go out of town, and contractors will start coming in and shipping their workers in because of the size and complexity of this project. Let's not allow that to happen. Although we appreciate people coming into our community, we need to focus on establishing and reestablishing those members of our community first. And a CWA on Central Coast Blue would ensure that even if an out-of-town contractor wins the bid, that local worker that lives in Arroyo Grande in the San Luis Obispo County actually get a chance to go to work on that project. It's a win-win for everybody. The contractors get their labor. The city gets their community back working. Tax dollars staying at home. We would appreciate the continued conversations that we are having. And bravo to all of you for having the tenacity to continue to think outside of the box. And on a personal note, from the building trades family to the family of Chief Pryor, our sincere condolences. Thank you for your time. Good night.
Madam Mayor, that concludes the public comment.
Thank you. So I will close public comment, and at this time we will move forward to our consent agenda. This is items 8, collectively items 8A through 8G. So let me check in with the council if they would have anything to pull for questioning or separate consideration. Councilmember Barnage? Councilmember George? Councilmember Storton? Mayor Pro Tem? All right, then I don't either. So let's go ahead and open public comment and see if anyone would like to ask questions or give us comment on items 8A through 8G.
If you would like to speak on these items, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. So I'll close public comment and bring this back around to the council for comment and possible motion. Councilmember George, any comments?
No comments, thank you.
Councilmember Storton, any comments?
No comments, thanks.
Councilmember Barnage?
No comments, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
No comments, Mayor, but I'm happy to make a motion.
Please do.
I'll move approval of consent agenda items 8A through 8G.
And I'll second.
Any discussion? All right, City Clerk Matheson, we've got a motion and a second. Can we get a roll call, please?
Tim Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russell?
Yes. Items 9 tonight, we have none, and nor do we for item 10. This takes us to item 11A. This is consideration of the 5-year capital improvement program and 5-year local sales tax fund expenditures program. I'll turn this over to City Manager McDonald.
Good evening, everyone. I'm actually going to hand over the reins to our accounting manager, Nicole Valentine, who will be leading us through the presentation, although you will be seeing from some others as well, as this is really a collective effort. So the CIP does touch pretty much every department in our city. And so we do have a number of staff members available as well for questions as we get into the discussion later. So with that, I will hand things over to Nicole.
Just getting the PowerPoint queued up. Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Nicole Valentine, the City's Accounting Manager, and I will be presenting the consideration of the 5-year capital improvement program and the local sales tax fund expenditures for the fiscal year 2021 through 23 biannual budget. The presentation tonight will be a review of the 5-year capital improvement program. By reviewing a 5-year program, this allows for long-term capital and financial planning and accommodates multiple year projects. We will also review the 5-year sales tax expenditure fund that provides for both operating and capital needs. All proposed expenditures in both programs are reviewed and prioritized every budget cycle. The city has completed 16 projects this year. Our Public Works Director, Bill Robeson, will highlight these projects.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. Can you hear me?
You're a little quiet, though.
Okay. Let me try. Is this better?
Much better.
Okay, thank you. So what we have here is a slide of just some completed projects for the past year. And again, like Nicole stated, there's 16 projects completed, and we'd like to highlight a few. What you're seeing on the screen is the before and after picture of West Branch Street, where we did some pretty extensive dig out repairs so that the structural horizon of the asphalt would be very functional for about 5 to 7 years. And we can go to the next slide. Yeah. This is a project that we've kind of been talking about a little bit today. This is the lobby of our city hall, and you can see the plexiglass panels and support system, and then the the security door or the main door now into the inside of the offices, you can see on that left photo. So this serves as both a security and a safety measure so that any transpiration or transmission of COVID is drastically reduced by the height and the assembly of that panel system. This is a CDBG project that your council approved, and it's turned out really beautifully and very functional. It's going to open, this is at Akita Field, sorry. So we have thousands of people that use this field. We have softball fields in the front and the foreground on the left, and then soccer fields, soccer practice fields, and then there's also a baseball field at the back that you can't see further left on the photo. But it is a lighted field, so we have a lot of adult sports, a lot of youth sports. You can see the ramp on the right. It's now concrete. The steel tubing for the railing system has been put in. And today we installed about 8 trees. We planted 8 trees in that area. And we're gonna be opening that up for public use for them, for the public to access either at the end of this week or beginning of next week. And this is a photo of our water service replacement projects. We have these dotted all over the city. They are replacing old, rusted out galvanized piping systems that serve residences and commercial, but mainly residences. And we've done about 20 of these this year. You can see one of our public works employees down in that pit there with the Vactor truck sucking out the mud so we can get to that piping system and replace it with PVC piping. And I'd just like to highlight that this is an in-house job. A lot of jurisdictions have to hire out for that. So we save quite a bit of money by having in-house skills and in-house employees that can perform this type of work. And this is our Bridge Street Bridge. As we all know, we had the ribbon cutting not too long ago. So there's the before picture with the asphalt degrading, and obviously the that bridge was older and now can really take unlimited capacity on tonnage to cross it. So it's a very functional and very functional bridge, but remains very historic and iconic for our city. And there's just another shot. I did get a few questions on the mitigation replanting plan. You can see in the foreground the riprap underneath the bridge itself, and then kind of the jute netting and open soil at this point. There's also a large area above the bridge that you can't see. So we have a really extensive habitat mitigation plan where we have planted hundreds of shrubs and trees to reestablish that riparian vegetation, which is really essential to having a healthy creek and keeping erosion down and keeping that habitat healthy and booming. This is a job over at FCFA, Fire Station 1. And it is a security fencing gate where we've been able to close off the back portion of the fire station so that staff can have a secure and safe place to park. It also limits the public entry where it was totally open before. There's some bays over behind that staircase system that are open most of the time because the engines have to be able to get in and out quickly. And in turn, that allowed the public to just kind of walk through. There's no security there, but this fencing system and operable or automatic gate provide that security once again. So I'll hand this over to Nicole and she can take back over. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. The projects included in the 5-year capital improvement program total $77.2 million. Over the two-year biannual budget, the projects total $12.8 million. These projects have a large reliance on grant funding, debt financing, and the local sales tax fund. The proposed project list continues to focus on maintaining the city's current assets and infrastructure. The major projects in the five-year capital improvement program include public safety video cameras costing $250,000, the trafficway bridge improvements costing $10.3 million, $9.1 million will be funded with the highway bridge program, and $1.2 million will be funded from sales tax, the Briscoe Road and US 101 interchange costing $32.1 million, sewer and water infrastructure costing $3.7 million, and the Central Coast Blue project costing the city $18.7 million. $1.45 million funded through water availability funding, and the remainder from grants or debt financing. Here are a few pictures to help visualize the major projects. The public safety video cameras. This photo shows our current view of the from the police station and the actual camera located in front of Bank of America. The trafficway bridge replacement project. This photo shows the location of the bridge in the village, and then a side view of the bridge, so you can see the underneath where the replacement really needs to happen. Water and sewer infrastructure include water main replacements and trenchless sewer lining. The Briscoe Road US 101 interchange shown here are the current interchange and the proposed new intersection. The Central Coast Blue project. This proposed project is for recycled water project that will purify wastewater and inject it into the groundwater basin in order to protect the basin against seawater intrusion and to provide a reliable supplemental water supply. This pie chart breaks down the five-year capital improvement program by function. The streets and bridges make up 65% of the five-year plan. Water makes up 28%, and the remaining 7% are made up of parks, stormwater, wastewater, and miscellaneous projects. And this table shows the five-year capital improvement program by funding source. So we have a variety of funding sources, sales tax, SB1 money, water and sewer enterprise funding, highway bridge program money, state transportation improvement programs, and debt financing. The local sales tax fund is proposed in this five-year plan. It includes $248,000 for improvements to the city's IT infrastructure, including upgrade or replacement to servers, storage, and the city's firewall, storm drainage improvements of $1.2 million, continued funding of public safety enhancements of approximately $4.5 million, including $2.8 million for the services from the Five Cities Fire Authority, $910,000 for the senior police officer position over 5 years, funding towards a wildland fire engine, ladder truck, and the police firing range, striping and sidewalk improvements totaling $595,000. The council action requested tonight is to provide direction on the proposed five-year capital improvement program and the five-year local sales tax fund expenditure program. These programs will be brought to the City Council for adoption along with the operating budget in June. Myself and the many staff members who helped put together the five-year capital improvement program are available to take any questions the council may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. What a great picture. I've never seen that one on the right before.
Right? Jill sent it over. I thought it was beautiful.
That's fantastic. Okay, so let's start with the council and see if anyone has questions. So we'll start with Council Member George. Any questions?
Thank you, Mayor. I had my questions answered prior to the meeting, so I have no questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Barnett, any questions?
You know, I had a lot of questions. I did get those answered by City Manager McDonald, but just for the sake of maybe a couple, since I see there is some public listening and they might watch the meeting later, let me just go to some of my questions, just a couple. Let's see, the pedestrian, so project 5607, this would probably be for Mr. Robeson, the pedestrian improvements. Could you just give me a quick, or give the public quick Cliff Notes version of what potentially these are? Project 5607 bill.
You know, I think that Robin Dickerson is on the line and she might be able to answer those questions as well. Robin, are you on the line?
I'm adding her right now, so she'll be there shortly.
Okay, thank you.
I can answer this question as well if you would like.
Sure. Take a crack at it.
Okay, so there are three pedestrian projects applied for. The uncontrolled pedestrian crosswalk on the west leg of East Branch Avenue at Alder Street, the school crosswalk across from Farrell Avenue at South Halcyon Road, and the school crosswalk on the south leg of South Halcyon Road at Sandalwood Avenue.
Okay, thank you for that, Nicole. My last question is the East Branch streetscape. We put this project on hold, and that's included. I had that question answered, but I'm wondering if a staff member could just tell us what is sort of why it was put on hold and what's coming up potentially for that project.
This is Whitney McDonald. I do think it might be most beneficial to hear from our city engineer, Robin Dickerson, if she's available. Otherwise, I can take a stab at it, but it probably should be able to describe in better detail than me. There she is.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, this is Robin Dickerson, city engineer. We took a look at East Branch Street about a year ago, and we had some concerns about truck turning radiuses here at the corner of Mason and East Branch. There were also some concerns with some of the proposed improvements with trying to get trucks and agricultural equipment down East Branch. So that was temporarily put on hold while we try to sort some of that out. So we just need to really pick that up and move it forward. But there were some concerns, and the last thing we wanted to do was build a bunch of improvements, find out they weren't going to work or they were going to create issues and have to tear them out or remove them.
Okay, thank you for that, Robin. And maybe just one more question since you are right here. On the Fair Oaks Orchard off and on ramps, the project 5601, the funding that we're talking, what we're talking about spending, the $100,000, that's just for the study, if you will, for lack of a better name, to see what we should do at that on-ramp, off-ramp, and intersection, correct?
It's a little more complicated than just that particular intersection. What we have is we have two non-standard on and off-ramps, one being the Fair Oaks off-ramp, the other one being the Traffic Way on-ramp there on southbound 101. Mm-hmm. Both of those have got their own issues, and what we're going to be looking at trying to do is figure out how to remove some of the hazards, because the Fair Oaks off-ramp location impacts the weaving requirements for the Grand Avenue on-ramp to southbound US 101, and trying to weave from the off-ramp to the on-ramp, there's just not a lot of room. So what we're going to try to do is take two very non-standard on and off-ramps and create a new interchange with the help of SLOCOG, who has also put some money in to do what they call a PID, which is the project initiation document, to figure out what we want to do. So we will be losing probably two ramps in exchange for a new on and off ramp.
Okay, and so the expenditure there is for the work associated with the plan to come up what the plan would be, essentially, correct?
Right, and because we're working with interchanges, we have to involve Caltrans, and SLOCOG also giving us $200,000 to help in the process.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that brief sort of refreshing of my memory on those things. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you. Councilmember Storton, any questions?
Thank you, I do. I had several answered, but for public benefit, I'd like to have a few answered now. In regards to the Briscoe project, obviously it continues to increase in price. Some things are beyond our control. But as I look at some of the various funds that we do have in place and can draw from, I was curious with the SLOCOG funding of the $6.6 million. Obviously that was allocated to us several years back. Is there any discussion or availability of increasing that funding with the recognition that everything costs more now and the money isn't as worth as much as it was at that time that it was issued to us, but we still continue to absorb more costs?
I can jump in on that question. This is Whitney McDonald here. I am speaking a little bit for our city engineer who attended a meeting very recently, I believe yesterday, with SLOCOG, and I believe they may have reiterated something we have heard from them before, which is they will not be providing any additional funding for this project. So we do not believe that SLOCOG is a viable avenue for receiving additional grant funding for the project. We will continue seeking other grants as they come up and may become available. We are trying and looking at some federal opportunities as well. I know transportation infrastructure is something that's being talked about currently. And so we are certainly trying to go after all the potential pots of money that we might be able to find out there. One additional note is, as part of our design request for proposals for design work, which is the next step for that project, we are going to be asking for some assistance from our contractor in going after grant funding. And so basically trying to find somebody to help us make sure that the project is financially feasible through grant funding or other financing opportunities, but especially that grant funding option. So just wanted to let you know, we definitely intend to include that in the services we're looking for.
Great, I appreciate that. And aside from the total cost, you know, from the staff report is roughly $32 million. And I believe that's without the calculation of value engineering. I know it mentions it in the report, but just for public benefit, can you kind of talk about the value engineering and what that means and how that may help us in the total cost in the long run?
Sure. I think I may ask Robin to jump back on and give a little more detail about what we mean by value engineering and where we think that will bring the project down to. So if she's available, I may ask her to come on board.
Okay. Value engineering is going to help us figure out really what, because if you go through the project itself, it looks like we started throwing in just about everything we could possibly want on this project and never giving any cost or any indication of where we were going to get funds to fund all the bits and pieces. It was like, we have this project and we want this, we want that. We've got a park and ride out there that we may or may not be able to afford. If we don't do the park and ride, we may be able to adjust a roundabout slightly and not have to take anything from the county. We may not have to relocate a building. Those are all the kinds of costs that right now, because we don't have a set design and we don't have all the ins and outs figured out, we don't know where we can save money. But by going back in and sitting down and putting pencil to paper and coming up with the design, figuring out what is really necessary as part of this project, at least in the first phase, to move forward. We may find out that once we get started and if we defer the improvements on Grace Lane, maybe once the roundabout goes in, we may figure out that the improvements on Grace Lane are not needed. So it's really trying to define a project based on a reasonable construction cost. And that's really where we want to head. But until we get into that design, it's really hard to know what those numbers really are.
Okay, no, I really appreciate that explanation, and that's really our next step, Robin, then, is that we need to go through this design phase to completely understand what our true costs are going to be. And then from that point, we'll be much more educated and can make some more important decisions on how that project moves forward.
Yes, and then I also want to say we've accomplished a major milestone on this project. We now have a project report and two environmental documents that are approved, and that can't be taken from us at this stage. And when we go and we start looking at future financing, those are the kinds of things they're going to be looking for, is how solid is this project? Do you have your environmental clearances? And we are fortunate that we've got not only a CEQA document, but we also have a NEPA document, which opens us then up for some federal funding that we wouldn't be able to get if we only had a CEQA document.
Very good. Okay, thank you, Robin. I appreciate it. That's all the questions I had, Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Paulding. Any questions?
Just a couple of quick questions. Thank you, Mayor. I did want to just make a quick comment. I'm glad to hear that staff will be pursuing grant opportunities with regard to the Briscoe project. Councilmember Storton asked a couple questions I had related to the Briscoe project. Another one would be in looking through the capital improvement program, I didn't see the Mark Millis rec building improvements to replacement costs indicated. And so I was just wondering if you could, City Manager McDonald, respond to that. And maybe that's a budget discussion that we have soon. That's why it's not indicated in the CIP.
Sure thing. Thank you. It is an issue that we did discuss briefly when we talked about goals and priorities for our upcoming two fiscal years as part of this budget cycle. We are recommending, and we're happy that it's is now one of our identified goals, is to have a discussion about that building specifically and the future of the building. It does need replacement, but it raises questions. We believe the costs are probably at least $3 million for a replacement of that structure. Again, though, it's a very rough ballpark. We certainly haven't done any design work toward that end, but we do think that the discussion should include really a broader discussion of the services that are currently offered at that building and the extent to which they make sense for us to continue providing going into the future. And just what our community wants and needs, and that includes the future of that building specifically. So it's pulling on that specific issue, pulls on a thread that I think would be good for us all to discuss in whole. So that's our current thought and why we don't have any portion of our sales tax revenue, as an example, or other funding identified for that replacement at this time, because we want to make sure that if that is something we want to do, that we're doing it as a group, you know, that we've all made a concerted effort to evaluate it and come to that conclusion and then move forward from there.
Okay, that sounds great. And that was the timeline for that was going to be in our top priorities update, which we'll see in the budget that we're going to review in June. So, okay, sounds good.
We are anticipating that being within the next year. So in the first year of the 2-year budget. Yeah.
Excellent. Good to know. Thank you. And then my second and last question pertains to the parklets. Obviously, the city has done a really good job at making things work for the business community and for our residents during COVID. What I'm thinking from a capital cost standpoint, the ongoing maintenance costs of those, it's maybe not a CIP function, but it definitely needs to be discussed at some point. How do you envision approaching that here in the near term?
Yes, we do not. We don't think that it's truly a capital improvement project. They are temporary. I mean, they are currently. And so we view that as an operating cost at this point. But as we near the end, or hopefully near the end of this pandemic, it certainly is something that we want to look at and bring forward to council to discuss the future of the parklets. not just the parklets, but also Short Street, because it has been closed and used in a similar fashion. And so we think it would be good. It would be most beneficial for us to look at that together. We don't have any current plans to pull out those parklets. For the time being, they are successful and highly used. And so we are assuming we're going to keep those in place until we bring forward a discussion to council to make a decision about whether they should be permanent and what that might look like. There's a lot of different avenues that could go, I think, depending on interest and, what type of financial arrangement might need to be worked out with the business owners who are using them, there are a number of details to go into there if we're looking at it in a more permanent basis. So we do anticipate needing to bring that forward as well. Given where we're at with the pandemic, it's been interesting because we don't want to have that conversation too early, because we don't really know what's going to happen. And we're not totally in the clear yet. So we've been thinking we want to let the dust settle after things resume to more or less normal, and then be able to really evaluate the interest and the need going forward.
That sounds good. Thank you for the update. Those are all my questions, Mayor.
Thank you. I had most of my questions answered prior to the meeting, but several came up as part of the PowerPoint slides. So, Nicole, I'm going to need a little bit of help, and my questions are not going to be very well formed because I'm doing this in real time. Could you please put up the slide called Proposed Projects? That one. Thank you so much. So my question is, in terms of the 77.2 and the 12.8, how much of each of those two numbers is Briscoe?
Good question. So Briscoe and the 2 years is... Well, of the 77.2, Briscoe is 32.1.
So the assumption is it's going to be done at the end of 5 years, so that will be completely expended?
Correct.
Okay.
That is the way we have included it in the full five-year plan. So from what Robin has told me, design will be completed in 1 year, and then we will start purchase of right-of-way and construction.
Okay. And then what about the 12.8?
The 12.8. I'm going to stop sharing so I can switch around a couple screens just to make sure I give you the accurate information. Oh, I'll leave it up. I'll flip on my paper.
I'm sorry. I would have asked these ahead of time, except for I didn't see these numbers before. So I apologize
to
put you on the spot, Nicole.
No worries. I have it. I do. Streets, Briscoe. So in 2021, new funding. I'm going to do some quick math. I'm going to say about $900,000 in the 2 years.
In the 2 years.
In the 2 years, yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you could go to the funding by type slide.
Yes. I think it's down this way. This by function?
Oh, the one right before, that one.
Yes.
On the debt financing one?
Yes.
How much of the 23-24 and 24-25, actually, how much of the 38,000 is debt financing for Briscoe?
Briscoe debt financing total is 21, I'll round up, 0.7 million.
Okay. And then the other part is what?
Central Coast Blue.
Okay. So we're already building that in, even though we haven't.
We are. We hope that we receive grant funding and you guys have not completely agreed to the dollars, but yes.
Okay. And then the next question I think is for Robin. I didn't pull this into my giant bowl of financial considerations before tonight because there was some discussion about a future interchange that includes correcting Traffic Way and Fair Oaks. I am sure that I'm asking you questions you don't know the answer to, but maybe you can, kind of spitball it, Robin. What would a cost for that ballpark be? Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. More or less than Briscoe?
It's probably going to be comparable, I would imagine.
Okay, so, and the idea of that would be correcting the safety issue at Fair Oaks, both with the on-ramp from West Grand and the off-ramp at Fair Oaks, and then the safety issue of the left-hand entry at Traffic Way, correct?
Yes.
Okay, what safety issue are we correcting at Briscoe?
Right now, we're correcting the frustration that everybody is feeling now that we've come out of COVID and they're now having to drive through Briscoe. And I'm getting calls almost on a daily basis the last couple weeks.
Okay, so it's not so much a safety issue as it is a circulation issue.
It's a well, we've had several accidents. West Branch, that segment of West Branch is, I believe, one of our top collision areas.
The part where it meets Briscoe?
Yeah. A lot of people coming down off that hill, they're gaining speed, and then they hit the top of the hill, and they don't realize that it's backed up, and they're nailing each other on the back end.
Okay. So it's going south on, or is that east?
I think that's east.
East, right? East on West Branch. Well, that's confusing. East on West Branch. Okay. Thank you for that. And is there, I guess, Robin, this would also be for you. I'm going to couch this in a comment, but I genuinely mean it. It's no secret that I'm the only council member here who's fighting against Briscoe, but now we're looking at a potential for a second project of that same, if not more expensive, ballpark. What are the odds of SLOCOG funding a second project in the same area?
Well, they've already given us $200,000 to try to help figure it out. And right now I am writing SLOCOG and Caltrans because of some of the issues we're now seeing that weren't part of our issues because of the closure of the at-grade crossings further south.
Can you say that in different words for me? I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you just said.
Right now, I'm dealing a lot with SLOCOG and Caltrans, trying to keep things at the forefront because when we did the at-grade closures, south of the city, the on US 101.
Oh, the three closures. Okay, got it.
It was with the understanding that we would get support from the county and from Caltrans, not just from the city of Arroyo Grande, and then SLOCOG would also support. So I am trying to hold their feet to the fire and not let this one get away. And SLOCOG has already offered up $200,000 to get a PID going. And I'm hoping that we can gain some momentum with the project identification documents and get Caltrans and get the county to help support some of the decisions that we're gonna have to make because of some of the things they're doing south of the city.
So would we expect a similar dollar amount like we got for Briscoe?
I would expect more under the circumstances.
And then we would have some sort of shared cost again. So another debt financing, multi-million dollar debt financing for that project as well.
I'm hoping we look at this one a little bit different and take some lessons learned from Briscoe. I'm hoping that this doesn't turn around and become another 20 years out project before we even get to a point where we can get to design like we did with Briscoe. So I'm
not sure that answers my question, though.
Well, I'm hoping to go down a different avenue than we did with Briscoe, so that we're not looking at the same issues, and take the lessons, at least that I've learned from what experiences I've had coming in so late in the game on Briscoe, and apply those lessons to Traffic Way and the Orchard Interchange or Fair Oaks on and off ramps, and be able to come in with a project that we can construct based on the money that's going to be available at the time.
So you're saying we would not have to take out any debt financing for that?
That would be my hope. And there's a lot of things up in the air right now. I don't have even a project defined. I don't know.
Okay, I want to make sure I heard you right. So if I realize this isn't on you because you haven't been here this whole time, so this question is not directed at you in any way, shape, or form. But are you saying that if we had approached Briscoe in a different way, then we wouldn't have been looking at debt financing of $15 million?
I would really like to answer that question in a few months when we get into design, because I feel that there is a way to significantly reduce the construction cost of Briscoe. And right now we've got so many, because we haven't gone into design, there's an extreme high percentage of probably dollars that are being double counted just because we haven't broken things down like we would if we were in design. If that makes any sense.
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't, because I've been around for most of that design. And I seem to remember that, for the example, the sound walls were a Caltrans requirement. It wasn't something the city of Arroyo Grande wanted. And the clearances that were requiring those large chunks of public right-of-way at the county's property and St. Pat's weren't because we wanted those big things, but because those were Caltrans requirements. So now I'm hearing you say we may be able to value engineer that, but we didn't engineer that in the first place. That was Caltrans that was doing that. So now I think I'm hearing you say that Caltrans is going to back off that now, or how would that happen?
Well, part of the problem, I don't have all the history to know how a lot of this came about. Players at Caltrans have changed, and I don't think we'd be here right now if it wasn't for Paul Valadao, because when that project report went into Caltrans for final review before final signatures back in, I want to say, November of 2020, we were getting hit with all kinds of stuff that would have cost us a lot of additional money that Caltrans was saying they needed for us to provide additional studies regarding VMT, some of these different things. And that would have held the project up for another year, maybe two. And there would have been additional costs in order to get to that completion point. And I went to Paul Valadao and basically said, we don't have this, and we're not starting this project over. You guys have already reviewed the preliminary documents. We need to move forward with what we have. And he then worked with his guys and said, no, we're not going to go back and ask for the world. We're going to keep it with what we have, and we're going to move forward, and we're going to close this project out.
So how does that allow room for redesigning the project at value engineering that will reduce those public right-of-ways and the sound walls and things? It sounds like you're saying it's not going to be changed at this point. So now I'm not understanding at all what's in the staff report.
The sound walls, it's one of those things. Right now we took a vote and the vote was inconclusive.
Who took what vote? I'm sorry.
The city sent out deal to all the property owners affected by the sound walls. We didn't get enough votes in to conclusively say they wanted the sound walls, but at the same time, we didn't get enough votes to say they didn't. If we would have got the rest of the votes in, it could have gone either way. So there's things like that that we can revisit without holding the project up any further. We're at a point where we need to move forward. We need to get into design with this project to see what avenues we have to reduce the cost.
And what happens if we don't, if we aren't able to do that?
We're going to get closer to getting a shovel-ready project. And right now I'm hearing that there is going to be potential for future federal funding coming from the government, because we're not going to get it through SLOCOG. And in order to do that, you have to be pretty close to shovel ready. And if we continue to drag Briscoe out, we're going to lose opportunities for future funding.
Okay, I'm just going to have to leave it at that. So those are all my new questions. Let me just check in with the council and see if any new questions have come up related to that. So if you do have any, just go ahead and unmute yourself, but otherwise I'll go to public comment.
Mayor, this is Councilmember George. I have a follow-up question to your question because it makes me question something. This is going to be to Nicole. So you're saying that the debt financing, the Briscoe portion, is 21.7? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and is that based on the $38.2 value or the $24.025 value?
It's based on the $32.1 million value. So $38 million with the value engineering, reducing the total cost to 32.1, which is the cost included in the capital improvement plan.
So just to clarify real quick, the $32 million amount is the compared to the $38 million. It represents removal of the sound walls and delaying the southbound grand off-ramp improvements. Can't remember off-ramp or on-ramp, but there were a second set of improvements that Caltrans had wanted to wrap up and bundle into this project. So we pulled those two items out from the $38 million, which is the total, and that's where we get to the 32.
Okay, but then we also have estimated cost projection of $24 million.
That's with the value engineering.
Right. So,
right.
Are we assuming that we're not going to value engineer and keep it at the 32, or is that we're just putting that in to be safe?
We are putting that in to be safe.
Okay.
Right. And the value engineering is really looking at some places where we're hoping to cut back on additional right-of-way acquisitions and retaining walls and delaying the Grace Lane improvements as well, or potentially removing them if that's what the data really supports, those items. Thank you, Nicole. I think this is maybe helpful to help explain those differences.
I knew I had the slide. I just didn't want to flip through 20 to find it.
So the 32, where do we get the difference between the 32 and the 21.7 that we're going to debt finance? Is that the 6.6 from SLOCOG and then the 2000 from the transportation fees? So I feel like we're still, my numbers aren't
adding up. It is. So here's a table that might help answer your question, Lon. So we have STIP money, traffic signalization money, transportation facility money, and then we're going to use some sales tax money.
Okay, so the sales tax money that you're going to use, mm-hmm. has that already been set aside, or is that something that we need to budget for?
It is included in the sales tax expenditures report attached to this. So there's nothing set aside in 21-22. There is the first ask here of 950 and 2223.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. That was my follow-up question. Oh, I'm sorry. One last thing. This is for City Manager McDonald. And we had talked about moving forward to the design phase. I understand the mayor's concern. How much would it cost us? I know we're already in $2.6 million. How much would it cost us to go through the design phase? And from my understanding of our conversation, part of what you're going to be looking for is someone who is a consultant who's knowledgeable enough that can actually go out and seek more grant funding. So what is that looking like? It's going to be adding to the 2.6 million that we're already in.
So I believe we are currently estimating 1.4 million for design. I am not certain if that would include services like seeking grant funding or not, but we will certainly know more after we issue the RFPs and get bids back. And your council will see the results of that. We certainly would need to bring that contract forward for council's consideration and approval.
Okay. So if we get the design in and they do what they need to do and we can value engineer it, then we're really not looking at the 32, but hopefully we'd be looking at the 24, and that's before any additional grant funding. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's okay. Correct. And so the debt, you know, if we are able to value engineer down to the 24 million, then our debt financing would be quite a bit less than the 21 million. But for the CIP purposes, that's, we were looking at 32. I know there's a lot of numbers we're throwing out. Hopefully people are kind of following.
Okay, those were my follow-up questions. Thank you.
Does anyone else have follow-up questions?
I do.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Keith.
Nope,
just a couple. Robin, can you said you mentioned when the mayor was asking you questions about the daily calls that you get from people about Briscoe, and then we talked about the accidents as well. Can you just go over, I'm trying to picture in my mind what you, first of all, first question, what are these people saying when they're calling?
One, that they're frustrated about the traffic at Briscoe. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with people trying to turn right from West Branch onto Briscoe, while people have a green arrow trying to turn left from West Branch onto Briscoe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then we have another issue with people on Briscoe trying to get onto the freeway, mm-hmm, and wanting to make that left, but you've got people blocking traffic, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, so that people can't make that left on or onto the off ramp or on ramp.
Okay. Thank you for that. I've kind of been stuck there at a couple of those places at one time or another. So thank you for pointing those out. And so would you say, obviously during the pandemic, we still have a lot of people working from home, a lot of remote work going on, and that might continue into the future. When did these, so I had kind of hoped that maybe we wouldn't have as many traffic issues there, not right away, and maybe not as bad in the future because of this remote work that's going to be happening and is happening. When did these calls sort of start up again? A couple weeks ago, a couple months ago?
About the time we went into the orange tier.
Okay. Interesting. And then also, can you just repeat the accident, where it happens? People come over the hill, they're going up towards Walmart and Trader Joe's there, and then they can't see at the crest of the hill there's traffic, or am I missing something?
No, they're heading towards Briscoe.
Okay.
They're on West Branch, coming from probably the shopping center, headed towards Briscoe. Mm-hmm. And they come up the hill, they crest the hill, and they've got a little bit of speed behind them. They don't realize that sometimes that traffic backs way up. Mm-hmm. And that's where some of the rear end collisions are happening there on West Branch.
Okay, thank you for that. My last question was regarding this whole Fair Oaks on ramps, off ramps, and of course, we know that's a really odd you have to get on really quick or you have to get off, and you do that weaving right there. That's my exit for my house, more or less. So I was maybe under the assumption, and maybe I'm naive, that that's sort of Caltrans problem. That's not a City of AG problem over there. I understand the roundabout perhaps at some point that's on, you know, that's possibly a city issue, but Are you, and I know this is just really obviously way early in the game, but are you thinking that a lot of those costs would be borne by the city or by Caltrans? Because a lot of that would be freeway property.
A lot of it's going to be freeway property. Unfortunately, it's sort of within the Arroyo Grande jurisdiction because it's within our city boundaries. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of some of the discussion that I'm treading real lightly on right now before I start pushing too many buttons, is trying to figure out how we get Caltrans to come to the table with some of these facilities. So that the city doesn't have to bore the complete cost. I'd also like to see the county come into some of this stuff because they're continuing to develop some of the areas that have direct impact on our roads. And I don't think it's fair that they continue to add more traffic and more congestion to our roads and not have to pay anything to help us eliminate some of the issues we're having.
Okay, thank you for that, Robin. I would agree with you and on that last part, and thank you for the explanation. Thank you. And that last part, Mr. Storton, I know you want to go next, but go ahead. I want to piggyback that last question. Bill, I asked you this very same question at our last meeting. And what I asked was, why the county wasn't willing to partner with us at Briscoe, because they are responsible for what's coming down off the Mesa and on Halcyon. And can you repeat your response about that for me? Because I appreciate Robin's hope, but I got a directly different answer from you on this issue last time I asked the question.
I'll try to recollect my answer, but I think my answer was in the negative, basically saying that it is very difficult for us to partner with the county on these type of projects where there may have an influence or an impact on our city traffic or drainage or something like that. And trying to cooperate with them or collaborate with them can be somewhat challenging at times. So I believe that was my answer.
And I asked you if they would kind of help us out with the problem they were causing. And I believe your response was no, they won't. And we've tried.
That's true. Yes, that was my answer. I'm not sure if it applies to every single particular case, but in general, that's kind of the direction that we've taken and we've had with the county.
Okay, Mr. Storton, you had questions?
Actually, between your dialogue with Robin, Bill, and Councilmember Barnidge, my question has been answered. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that. All right, let's go ahead and open it up to public comment. I'll turn it over to AGP to administer that.
If anyone would like to make a comment on this, please raise your hand. We have one commenter, Stephen Juner, followed by Kevin Buchanan.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and council members. My name is Steve Juner. I'm an 8-year resident of AG Grove Beach. I wanted to just thank you for the opportunity to speak regarding the Briscoe project. I know that's been discussed ad nauseum. Just today, let alone over the last several years. I just had a few questions I wanted to throw out and if possible, get answers to. There was a request for feedback from the public to provide just quick emails to I believe it was like BriscoeStreet@arroyogrande.gov or something along those lines. And I wondered if you have a tally or some sort of result for the public feedback regarding the closure of the Briscoe on-ramp and off-ramp. That was my first question, kind of what was the result of that? Number two question was regarding a demand for a park and ride on the, I guess you'd call it the library side of the freeway. Is there any demand for that? Was there some study done to show that? My understanding of safety issues, I wasn't clear whether those safety issues that Robin was discussing, were those a result of the ramps being open or closed? If you could clarify that. And another question was sound walls. My understanding is that the residents in that area that are impacted by sound walls needed to opt out of having sound walls or opt in. Sounds like they are being asked to opt out unless otherwise specified. Two more quick questions. Has there been data gathered regarding the timing of the traffic lights on Briscoe under the freeway overpass? Do you have any data that supports any sort of timing study for those lights? And also, I guess the general question is, and I'm sure this has been asked before, what was wrong with just closing the Briscoe on-ramp and off-ramp? Seems like that solved a lot of the traffic issues in that area. And I don't know if that would be as big of a cost impact to the city. Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
The next speaker is Kevin Buchanan.
Hello, council members and staff. I just wanted to continue to pull a thread that Mayor Russell began to pull on here, and by reiterating that what we're talking about here is $30 million in debt financing for abstract circulation issues. And once we dive deeper into what these circulation issues are, we find that, you know, to translate the LOS framing, this amounts to an improvement in peak level delay. So peak levels, we're talking a short period during the day, of about 30 to 40 seconds for drivers in 2035. If we're saying that it's actually about safety issues, and I'm more specifically referencing the Briscoe project here to clarify, if we're concerned about safety issues, there are much cheaper ways for, with one another. If we're concerned about TOT or sales tax from businesses in those areas, there's no hard data in any of these reports that illustrate any clear increase or decrease to those revenues as a result of this project or lack of this project. And like I said, like we've already just discussed, I want to thank Mayor Russell for digging deeper into the justification here, because I think for some reason issues of vague traffic and circulation issues tend to be discussed and justified in kind of a bizarrely self-evident manner, even when we're talking about these huge costs. Like we just saw in potentially discussing future projects like this, trying to solve the problem of people being delayed longer than they'd like to be when driving their cars has always been and will always be a problem that we can continue to pour money into. People are frustrated by a lot of things in the city, so I find it strange that have elevated the concern of people being slightly delayed in their car to this level of proposed spending. There are many much more direct ways to increase the quality of life for people in our cities, particularly when we're talking about the tens of million dollars that we're proposing for this project. That's all I wanted to do, to continue to dive into the justification for the Briscoe project. Thanks for your time.
The next speaker is Ben Oakley.
Good evening, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, thanks. Just a couple of general comments from just a public standpoint. Ben Oakley, resident of Arroyo Grande. You know, when I look at the project, and especially the write-up in the staff report from this week, it's just apparent that there's a lot of uncertainties. And this isn't a criticism of the folks involved in managing this complicated project, but it's just concerning to me that something of this scope and magnitude at this stage in the game, you know, we're looking at a budget of either 38 or 32 or 24 in various levels of debt financing. So there just seems to be a whole lot of things that are still up in the air. on this project. So I think that's, you know, that's a pretty big concern. I think it's probably echoed by a number of people in the public. I'll just leave it at that. So thank you very much.
Madam Mayor, there are no more public comments.
Thank you very much. I'll bring this back around to the council for discussion. Let's start with Council Member George.
Thank you. I was just looking at my old notes from 2019 on Briscoe. It's interesting to see what how much changes in such a short amount of time. Mainly Briscoe and the, you know, it looks like it would be, no matter what, a minimum of a $5 million increase. But as the previous speaker had mentioned, there is a lot in the air, and I would hate to make a rash decision without knowing all of the facts and knowing all of the numbers. That being said, let me just get to my notes for this entire item. For the most part, I am in support of the capital improvement program that has been brought before us. I think that these items are all very worthy, and I think that I think staff did a great job in trying to isolate the issues that need to be addressed first. If I just look at the major projects going down the list, the financial management software, I can't tell you how many times I've placed calls into the city and asking questions, and it just takes a little while for them to get the answers to us because their software is so outdated and they're trying to figure out how to compile numbers and get us information, and we ask a lot of information. And so it would be nice to give our staff the tools that they need to better do their jobs. So I'm in full support of that. The public safety video cameras, absolutely in support of that. Speaking to the former chief of police, it was something that just needs to happen. And I'm glad to see that it is on our list. Kudos to our public works department, the 16 projects that they completed. Great job. And I'm looking at pavement management program, and I have full faith that they'll continue to do the great work that they've been doing. Traffic way, I love that that's going to be 88% funded. So that alleviates a lot of pressure from the council to have to make decisions on where to find more money to address that bridge. I'd love to find a way to address the swinging bridge, but that's for another day. Briscoe, I struggle with this one. It made a lot more sense to me 2 years ago. One of the things that we talk about is safety, and I agree with Mr. Buchanan. It's not an issue of whether or not someone's going to be inconvenienced by having to sit through 2, 3, maybe 4 cycles of lights during the day. It was more for me an issue of safety. And at the time, I had Chief Pryor pull up some statistics for me in 2019 in regards to accidents and the increase in accidents. And there was a 400% increase in accidents for, I think it was a 5-year span. I have to go back and look at my notes. But that was a significant amount. And if we're talking about moving forward to 2035, accidents aren't going to go down. So if we're not going to come up with mitigation efforts to reduce accidents, then we need to make flow of traffic more usable and safer. So for me, again, it's not the waiting at the light, it's the safety factor. And will accidents continue to increase? Will more people come into our community? Will there be more cars on the road? I know that Mr. Buchanan would not want that, but the reality is right now we are a driving community. And I think that we have a lot of ways that we can move towards a more walkable and public transportation community. But as it stands right now, we're not there. And so we do need to find solutions to problems that we are identifying. And this is something that was identified years ago, years and years and years ago. So I'm just, I hate that every year we have to come forward and defend this project. And at some point, we either need to say, this is what we're going to do and move forward, or we need to stop. So it looks like it's going to be another 1.4 million to move forward with the design phase. I would be in support of that. And then really at that point, I would hope that we would have enough answers to make a really educated decision on whether or not to pause this project or to move forward with it. Let's see. Yeah, that's about it. All the other, obviously Central Coast Blue is on here, and we're just going to have to wait and see where that project takes us. And all the other projects, I trust that staff has reason for putting them on here. I read them, they all make sense. And those are really my comments. I think that we need to reevaluate Briscoe, but I don't think we can do that with the information that we currently have. So I would be in favor of moving forward with Briscoe, at least through the design phase, and hopefully be able to seek more funding for the project and grant funding. So those are my comments. Thank you.
And forgive me, Council, I have made a grave error. Mr. Juner, I see that you are still there, and I'm grateful for that, because I went straight to Council comments after taking copious notes on your questions. So I'm going to pause Council comments right now, and I can see my internet is not great right now, so I'm going to do my best. So this is for staff, and I'm going to, I don't know who to answer, and I'm going to take the questions backwards, because I think based on Mr. Juner's questions, he is really asking, can we close the ramps? So let's start with that question. What was the wrong with closing the on and on ramps?
You want me to take that, Whitney?
Sure thing. Thank you. You read my mind.
Okay, we did the study with the closure of the on and off ramps. So one of the problems was Caltrans would not let us close the on and off ramp indefinitely. And that was part of the reason we were forced to reopen the on and off ramp. The other issue, although things got better at Briscoe, because you weren't fighting the traffic on the on and off ramp, the on ramp at Camino Mercado and the ramp at Grand got worse. So we took one place, made it better, but we took two other places and made them worse. So that's part of the reason that we just can't close the on and off ramp.
But the short version is we can't do it anyway because Caltrans won't let us.
Right.
Okay. And then going down those questions, I'm going to keep going. Okay, Robin.
Okay.
The question was public feedback. What was the ratio of support or oppose?
For the sound walls?
I believe it was just for the project itself.
I will have to look that one up because right off the top, I don't remember.
Okay. And then can you comment on the demand for the park and ride? Why is that part of the project?
I hate to say that, but that's one of the questions that I'm trying to figure out why it's in the project. I don't know who demanded that, where that really came from, because that was, when I got here, it was already there. And this goes back, it looks like there was just a laundry list of things that just kept being added to the project. Nobody stopped to consider how any of this was going to get paid for, and it just became part of the project. And now we're at this phase where we've got all these things. It's like when you go to build a house and you start seeing what's out there, and oh, that would be nice. So you start adding all these things, and then you look at the bottom line dollar and you realize that you're not going to get everything you want.
I can tell you that that came from Caltrans, just like the rest of it. This was not something that the city of Arroyo Grande went for. So that laundry list is all of Caltrans's requirements that they kept slapping on us as part of that project. This is what slowed it down. So I understand why you're looking at it going, what the heck? And that's why I'm questioning the value engineering of whether or not we can actually do this, because we didn't ask for it in the first place. So the next question was a question about safety.
Did St. Patrick's Church or St. Patrick's School have anything to do with that park and ride? Because I've heard that's where some of that might have come from.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
The next question is safety as a result of the ramps being open or closed. In other words, if they were closed, would it be safer? But I think that kind of piggybacks that same question, which is, can we close them? And that's kind of a moot point.
Right.
So I guess I just answered his question for him. For the sound walls, was it an opt-out or an opt-in?
We were trying to find a majority for either for or against, and we never received a majority either for or against.
And finally, do we have data for the timing of the lights and whether that's been optimized?
This is where it gets complicated. All of those lights, except for El Camino, might be cities, but the Briscoe and the West Branch lights are all operated by Caltrans.
Okay, thank you very much. So again, forgive me, Mr. Junior, for not asking those before we went to council comments, but I'm going to resume council comment at this time. Yeah, Councilmember Barnage?
Mayor, there's some other questions that I wanted to ask before. I mean, I can ask them before my questions, but they might, or my comments, but they might be helpful the rest of the council to hear.
Why don't you just go ahead and do both?
Okay, so I wanted to go back to the question from Mr. Buchanan about the, hold on, I'm gonna go to my notes. Hang on. I think he said 2035, there was a 30 to 40 second delay projected for 2035, a peak delay. During peak times, is that correct, Robin? I hate to put you on the spot with having to know this all by heart, but because I would think that we have, because I have, so no, I'm not going to go into comments. Okay, so right now, I think that I have had a 30 to 40 second delay right now in 2021. So for 2035 to be that delay, it just kind of, I just wondered if that was it correct or I was missing something.
Well, right now the AM peak and the PM peak based on before COVID 2019 counts, we were at 41 and 51 seconds.
Okay. Okay, so do you know, and I can obviously talk to, I can talk to Kevin later after the meeting tomorrow, but do you know where that data or that information's coming from, Robin, for 2035?
Probably from the project report itself, I would imagine.
Okay. So that's interesting to me that we're talking 15 years from now or, you know, 14 years from now. And we know what the county's doing, right? Because they're just building all kinds of houses and they have all kinds of other houses planned and we don't have any control. And that's one of my arguments. And so so if you could just look into that, Robin, and maybe we can talk tomorrow. So then my other question is, and I was just thinking of this when the first caller brought up, because most of us know that it didn't work to close the off ramps indefinitely because we had that backup specifically when people were exiting Grand Avenue during peak times. And it wasn't an inconvenience. It was that people were sitting on the freeway
right.
with cars going by them at, you know, 70 miles an hour. So fast forward, say we didn't go through with Briscoe, and 10 years from now, we it's busier. We have more traffic. We have more people using that off-ramp at Briscoe for Walmart, et cetera. So is it safe to say that if it got really bad and it was just inconvenient, you know, and that's what one of the callers said, is it's basically right now there are some safety issues, but it's also I'm so tired of sitting through two signals. So if people didn't want to get off at Briscoe and they're coming northbound and they decide, oh, I want to avoid Briscoe, it's a nightmare, and they start to push that traffic, they start to come to Grand Avenue instead, because you can kind of get almost the same place if you go to Grand and get on the frontage road. Would you envision that we might have those same safety issues when we close down Briscoe come up again at Grand Avenue, just simply because people stop using Briscoe and start using Grand Avenue, and it's just more people and more people on that same, you know, getting off on those different on and off ramps?
Right. And if you start backing up onto the freeway, then you start seeing more safety issues because you've got higher speeds. Whereas if you're doing it internally, the speeds are a lot lower within the city as opposed to the speeds on the freeway.
What I mean is that people are going to avoid that intersection in the future. I'm imagining they would, and they might get off at Grand Avenue instead. And as we know, the Grand Avenue off ramp is inadequate, as we found when we closed Briscoe. It's pretty short. And so I'm saying, if we didn't do anything to Briscoe, would we potentially create a safety issue, not just at Briscoe possibly, but someplace else like that Grand Avenue off ramp?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay, so I'll connect with you on that 2035 number tomorrow sometime, Rob, and that's fine. So I'm ready to move forward. Thank you to staff for the staff report. I really appreciated the photos that were included in there, and I think the public, it's nice to have them see instead of just words on paper, sort of the projects that we're projecting that we're going to hopefully start or finish in the next couple of years. And, you know, Briscoe, I do struggle with that because it is expensive. It's one thing to just be annoyed because of the delay. And to me, it's not really about the delay right now. I think it's more 10 years from now, 15 years from now, are we going to really regret, and we're going to have an actual safety issue at that intersection and other intersections because we just decided we couldn't do the project, and are we going to really regret it? And so it's not about the delay, because I think that when you have an older city with older infrastructure and roads and intersections, you know, we do have a lot of people, we do have a lot of traffic and a lot of people that we can't control. Our growth, we're almost completely built out. This isn't our growth. This is growth from other areas coming to Arroyo Grande. And so for me, it's not about today and the delay. It's about 10 or 15 years from now and having people backing up on the freeway on Grand Avenue. And then we have another issue at that off ramp. So I'm ready to move forward, and I look forward to staff being able to sort of get a plan out there that we can actually look at, and we can say, no, we don't really need this, or we need this. And right now we just are talking about things that we don't have enough information. And like Robin's saying, some of the things that were added on, and we'll see if we can possibly take some of those off and reduce the cost. So I'm ready to move forward with staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Could I just intercede? I just wanted to tell you that the dates for the collision that I was researching was from 2013 to 2019, and that was the 400% increase. Thank you.
Thanks for that. Councilmember Storton, comments?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor. I do agree with staff's recommendation. Really, I think this has really just come back to Briscoe. I'll talk about that in just a moment. It is interesting and it's compelling to look at the diversity of the projects that are done within our city. I don't think most citizens really stop to ponder how much work is done at the city level and the things that are done with their tax dollars on our behalf, and the ability to pay for it all and take care of it all just accumulates over time. And it's all of our responsibilities as owners of this city. And it is difficult to kind of pick and choose and balance the funds that we have trying to get all these necessities done, but it remains to be our responsibility. So I thank staff for the report and certainly all the workers in our city that put good work into getting these projects done. But going back to Briscoe, I think that has been the most contentious point. And although I have been in favor of Briscoe, I too am getting frustrated and tired of the continual cost increases. We're entering into a time with COVID now and the demand for workers and wood and material, and those project materials are only going up. I'm fortunate that I think we have a little bit of time to figure this out, with the hope that perhaps some of these costs will go down as things stabilize a little bit more, but it is concerning. But I do appreciate staff's discussion about the value engineering, the potential of taking some of the items that aren't necessarily a necessity, and can we reduce the financing costs through not only reducing perhaps the amount we would pay for debt service, but also give us the opportunity to obtain federal grants if necessary. And I think we'll only learn that if we continue to move forward to the next step. So I'm in support of the design phase and moving on to the next step. It is frustrating. We've had to take this long. And like the mayor said, maybe some of those things put in by Caltrans over the years have just extended this further and further. And it's frustrating when we hear, well, that person's not here anymore, and so it doesn't matter. Somebody else is in the position. And that part of it is kind of frustrating. So I hope that we can work successfully moving forward. I do think through SLOCOG, the fact that we were provided this funding, having the opportunity to sit down with SLOCOG executives and have some discussions about the competitive nature of many expenses that need to be paid for in our county, this one was made it to the list. And in comparison to other projects, I think we're fortunate to have that money. It's unfortunate it doesn't increase with the cost that we're looking at increasing as well, but that's something we don't have much control over. So I'm in support of staff's recommendation and at least moving through the design phase in order to get a hard cost and a total concept of the project. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to start by saying I think the staff report was well put together. I certainly appreciate all the assumptions that are driving the overall capital improvement program for large capital projects like Central Coast Blue or the Briscoe project. We should assume more and hope that we can then value engineer down, or in the Central Coast Blue project's case, that we would have additional revenues based on water rate increases. Which of course nobody wants, but we have to plan for our future. In terms of Briscoe, I appreciated the comments of Councilmember George and Storton about moving forward to the next milestone so we can make decisions based on more information and having the benefit of that, especially whether we might obtain some future federal funds. Whether grant funds or transportation funds from the Biden administration. So I think that that's important. I know we've spent a lot of money getting to this point. I think it's worth it to spend a little more to advance the process. And but at the same time, build in that next milestone and reevaluation point based on the circumstances at that time. Are the costs continuing to escalate? Are we not able to acquire additional funds? Then maybe it is time to pull the plug on the project. And I'll reiterate the fact that I had supported the other alternative way back when, because I thought it was the more fiscally prudent approach. But at this point in time, you know, I'm looking at the will of the majority of our council, looking at the fact that this project will improve the level of service at these intersections, which is a quality of life function for our community, not to mention improve the safety aspects as were discussed. So that's where I'm at on the Briscoe project. And in general, I wanted to make a point about regionalism. I think that when we were talking about other future interchanges, improvements that we might need to make in partnerships with the county or SLOCOG, it's really important that we kind of honor the agreements that we're making with them, the assumptions that we're working toward. That's important in general, just to make sure that when we are looking for funds in that form of partnership, that we're delivering our end. And so to the extent that we commit and then, you know, change directions, I think that can affect that relationship. So it's certainly something we should always consider, and as another reinforcing point for why we should continue to advance this project to the next, or the Briscoe project to the next milestone. So those are my comments at this time. I support staff's recommendation. Thank you.
So y'all know how I feel, and I'm tired of getting lambasted online that somehow I know the outcome of all of you, and so I'm just safe in saying what I'm going to say. But I want to be really clear. I'm very frustrated because I'm just going to look at this little clipboard here and add up how much money this council's talking about spending. $16 million potentially on Central Coast Blue, $20 million plus on Briscoe. Who knows how much, $20 million plus Traffic Way Fair Oaks. We know we need $7 million plus annually for pavement. We need $3 million for a rec building, minimum. We need millions, we don't even know what the number is, for infrastructure and sewer and underground type stuff. We need at least $1 million, if not more, for the swinging bridge. There's a limit. And if we take any one of these projects and look at it, they all have merit. They all have reason to do them. But we have to say no to some of them. And just because something's grant funded doesn't mean it's free. And we're talking about taxpayer money no matter what. And I'm frustrated that we continue to hope. We continue to spend more money and hope. 10 years ago, the Briscoe project was a $15 million project, and we got it halfway funded through SLOCOG. That's where the $6 million came from. It was almost halfway. And then 5 years later, it was $24 million. And now 2 years later, it's over $30 million. And we keep hoping that it's going to be less because maybe we get some grant funding or maybe we get some value engineering. And you know what's going to happen? Is 2 years down the line, we're going to value engineer it, but there is no way on God's green earth that the cost of this is going to go down. It just doesn't happen. So we're talking now about spending another $1.4 million to get to the point where we hope that they're going to tell us it's going to cost less. It's not. It never does. And what can we do with that $1.4 million? We can replace the swinging bridge. We already know we're going to spend that money, but we're going to throw that money away, hoping that we get a different answer down the road for value engineering for a bunch of questions that we don't even know why it is the way it is. And we're asking for changes, even though we don't even know if it's possible to get them changed. I'm really frustrated by this. Clearly, I'm not in support of moving forward with Briscoe so that we solve a problem that's not even going to get entirely solved, because it's not going to stop people from coming and cresting over the hill, which is where the accidents are coming from. Now, granted, not as many people might be turning right at the light if there's not a freeway on ramp there. But nevertheless, that speed issue is still there, and it's not going to solve that problem. So I continue to be frustrated by this. I continue to vehemently oppose it. And I just want to remind the council that when we look at CEQA analyses, for example, one of the things you have to do is you have to look at cumulative impacts. And I'm frustrated by the fact that we continue to make decisions in isolation without looking at the cumulative impact of the decisions that we're making for these very expensive and worthy projects. So we have to draw the line. And for me, what can we do with $20 million? If we're going to debt finance something, how about we debt finance our pavement? Because we can't do both. We can't do it all. That's all there is to it. So I would like to ask the council, I am in support of everything else that's in the CIP program. I don't have a problem with any of it. I appreciate all of the things that that staff is trying to do and all the projects that we have. We've talked about many of them. I would like to ask the council that if we're going to, clearly somebody's going to make a motion to move forward, if you could separate out Briscoe, because I would certainly vote yes on everything else, but there is no way I'm voting yes to go forward, because I am not just willing to say, oh, I wanted something else, but I'm going to go along with the majority. This one's too big. So if the council separates it out, then I'll support the rest of it. If the council keeps it in, then I'll be in opposition to staff's recommendation. So with that, I'll turn it over to you all to have a conversation about how you'd like to move forward.
Can you clarify for me, Mayor, if it were separated out?
Then I would vote yes on the CIP plan and no to go forward on Briscoe to fund.
Oh, so that would just kill the project right there. That's basically what that would mean?
No, you all would be saying yes and I would be saying no.
No, if we took Briscoe out, I was a little confused.
No,
by
I'm
your
saying
request.
That if you approve it separately.
Oh, okay. I understand. So
it's up to you.
Okay. So we're just approving the same thing. You just approve the bulk of the request. And if there was a 4-1 vote just for Briscoe, it would still continue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Sorry, can I just offer one point of clarification on what we are seeking, at least from staff this evening? It is, we're seeking direction and feedback, and we will be bringing this forward again for actual adoption with the overall budget. So you don't need to, you know, it's really, if you want to provide us with a vote on a recommendation, that's great, but we've, that's what we will bring forward for actual adoption later. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Okay, so if it's not necessary, then at this point, do you have everything that you need?
I believe we do. Yes. Let me just make sure with our city attorney to make sure I'm not missing something, because this is just to receive that level of feedback.
Yes, I think we do. This is not an action item. So we have the direction we need.
Okay. All right. Then with that, we will move forward. Let me pull up my agenda because I had notes out. This brings us to item 12, City Council Reports. So I'm first, CJPIA is a few months away. The T-bid did meet, and did move that we go to, bi-monthly meetings. Nothing of note there because, I reported to you last time that we were going to have the conversation based on one board member's concerns about our marketing, vendor. And that was tabled to the next meeting because that board member was not at this meeting. So there's nothing really to report until the next meeting. So hopefully we will have some resolution there on that. I do have a significant item to report, however, on South Sanitation District. Without giving you the play-by-play of the meeting, the upshot of the meeting was that when we were discussing the possible move of the sewer charges to the tax rolls, the two cities chose in its majority vote to not move forward with that proposal. So that is why Mr. Gent is not here tonight. And so I do want to report out not only to you, but to the people listening, that you can disregard that postcard that you have received and that the South Sanitation District San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District is no longer at this time pursuing that move. I have done one of my videos on that today because I don't think that that word is getting out because we continue to get questions and protests. So anything you all can do to help us get that word out that that is no longer on the table, that would be helpful. And that is, that does it for my report. So I will turn it over to Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Mayor, I'm actually looking for my notes. I can't find them. If you could come back to me, that would be great.
Councilmember Barnage, are you ready?
I've had no meetings since our last report out, so nothing to report. Thank you.
Care. Hurry up, Mr. Paulding. Councilmember Storton?
Just a couple things. For the Five Cities Fire Authority, we passed a new purchasing policy that the organization will start using. As far as the IWMA, I've talked about this at my last report out, but in short, the polystyrene ban was up for its second reading for it to be rescinded because of a provision in our JPA that allows for a supermajority vote of 8. That 8 was never reached, so the rescission of the ordinance did not occur. So now the ordinance remains in place and is effective as far as mid-April. As a result of that ordinance passing, there's some discussions from the county wanting to potentially move away from the IWMA and its involvement. So it's my understanding that Supervisor Pichon has requested that county staff review their relationship with the IWMA to determine the financial and logistical consequences should the county decide to move out. If they do, that brings greater questions for us as a city, as well as other municipalities in the IWMA, as to how we deal with our a variety of contracts and conditions that we have as an IWMA organization. It's too early for me to speculate or provide any other feedback other than to let you know those discussions will continue, and we'll still have discussions around that matter in our future IWMA meetings, which I have one tomorrow. My government affairs meeting, the last one, Ron Gonzalez, who is the site manager for Phillips 66, as you know, the plant is closing, and they have a plan to decommission starting in 2023. There's about 1,600 acres of land up on that area, which is very prime location, but what they plan to do is return the land back to its 1955 condition before the refinery was opened. There is not an expectation that another entity will come in to operate the facility, and there will be discussions as far as what type of development can occur on that property. It's in the early stages, but as far as the closure of the plant, I believe it's a loss to our community of our area communities of about 160 jobs, but there will be other discussions about that moving forward. And that's all I had. Thank you.
Councilmember George.
Thank you. So for CAPSLO, a couple of exciting things. The first thing is CAPSLO was awarded the Platinum Seal of Transparency. And as a council, we all love transparency and our organization. And it was awarded by GuideStar, which is a website that has nonprofit resources. So if you need to know about a nonprofit, you would go to GuideStar. So being awarded the Platinum Seal is a huge deal for the organization. So kudos to them for that. We worked on our strategic plan for CAPSLO and identified 4 major needs that we'll be moving forward with: childcare, living wage, employment, housing, and healthcare. The board decided to add education and food resources to that strategic plan. So that's what we'll be focused on in the next 2 years. Let me get to my other notes really quick. There is a detox facility next to 34 Prado, and they were about $100,000 shy of their funding, and they'd reached out to the cities, and it was something that as a city that I think we would have had to come to the table with to contribute for the community. However, Bank of America came through with a $250,000 grant. Yay. So they've already cut a check for $125. CAPSLO has it in hand. They are no longer in need of funding. So the detox facility will now be fully funded with some reserves. So super exciting to report on that. And let's see, for RAC. RAC has received $3.2 million in grant funding for groundwater programs. They've identified that the Aurora Grande sub-basin is actually one of the areas that they would like to commit to some grant funding to. It's considered a very low priority basin based on DWR prioritization, but the county has decided that the city of Aurora Grande and our basin is a higher priority. So a couple of things that grant funding will be going towards is the Aurora Grande Creek Stream Gauge Modification Project. So it's a grant that will help modify a barrier for a stream flow for the fish. And other than that, not too much was discussed. Really, the main topic of conversation is RAC itself is depending on the makeup of the Board of Supervisors. It's either a very relevant advisory committee, or it's really an unnecessary advisory committee. And that's something that RAC's really struggling with. So I believe they're going to move back to 6 meetings a year instead of monthly meetings, just to make the meetings more impactful. And we're going to really start diving in and really working on whether or not this this advisory committee is even needed at this time. And those are my report outs. Let me see, make sure. Regional Water Initiatives, I have not met, and Visit SloCal will meet next month. So those are my reports.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Thank you, Mayor. We had a Salem Obispo Council of Governments meeting, SloCog meeting on April 7th. Agency is conducting a regional transportation planning survey right now that's available to the public. That's at slowcog.org/engage, slowcog.org/engage. Would encourage folks to comment there. There has been this effort to oppose how we are, I guess, quantified as a metropolitan statistical area. It gets a little bit complicated, but it's about population thresholds. And the reality to SloCog is that it could negatively impact us by about $15 million in annual funding each year if the state of California decides to make this change. So there's a lobbyist employed to help work on that issue. It's currently underway. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions on that. I think it was earlier this month, heard from Peter Williams with SloCog, who is administering the Bike There with Rideshare program. That's May 20th to May 23rd. And it's a pretty cool program that we can all participate in. Dozens of locations countywide will host Bike There signs with a QR code to scan for the chance to win an electric bike. So you click the Bike There button and you scan the QR code and then enter that contest. You probably have heard about the $18.25 million grant for the Bob Jones Trail Project, which will complete that project, making the city-to-sea trail extension possible, which is a win for the community. So you could literally walk or ride from Avila Beach all the way to the city of San Luis Obispo. And then let's see, we also reviewed our policies needs assessment. Switching gears to the Regional Transportation Authority, we had a budget meeting on the 5th. The agency is trying to adapt again public transit to meet the needs of COVID, being COVID safe, and occupancy limits, which is obviously in a state of flux at this point in time. There were some route changes to routes in Oceano and Grover Beach, relatively minor changes that are being addressed with outreach to the riders in that area and community. And then the Air Pollution Control District Board will meet on May 26th to discuss budget, among other things. And I did want to mention, in follow-up to Councilmember Storton's comments regarding Phillips 66 and their Santa Maria oil refinery closure, that when we're looking at those impacts, one you might not think of is to the Air Pollution Control District, because they're our largest point source polluter. in the region. And because they will no longer be paying fees, the Air Pollution Control District agency might be losing about $500,000 a year in revenue. So I joined a committee to study how we're going to figure out ways to offset or mitigate that that loss of revenue. So anyhow, that concludes my report.
Thank you. So we're at item 13. This is council communications. Does anyone have any council communications at this time?
I said one. I just wanted to report that the Five Cities Homeless Coalition raised $17,500 at their FINS benefit a couple days ago. And that was just the initial number. So that usually goes up a little bit. So I just am really thankful for the community coming out in this odd year and doing a drive through and supporting those that are less fortunate. So thank you to everybody that was generous enough to go do that. Thank you.
Anyone else with council communications?
I'd just like to say real quick, Mayor, please, if I can, sending our condolences to the city of San Luis Obispo for their loss of Detective Luca Benedetti in the line of duty yesterday. And it just thankful for the people that provide that service to our communities. Thank you.
This is Councilmember George. Thank you for that, Councilmember Storton. I just had one. CAPSLO is holding a public meeting tomorrow from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock. It is asking for feedback on needs and challenges for low-income individuals. If you are interested in participating, you can call 805-544-4355 and they will email you a link to the meeting. That was it.
And I have two things. The first one I need to ask City Manager McDonald about. So we spoke last week and you brought it up in your comments earlier in your City Manager's report about bringing forward a discussion about the parklets and Short Street. And we had previously discussed that maybe it would be best if I brought that up as council communications, but it sounds like you may already have that rolling forward. So do you need direction from us to bring that forward?
Right. That's a good question, because we will need to bring forward a discussion of the parklets and if they will become permanent. And I do think that Short Street and the potential plans for that area is a good corollary. But the plans themselves are pretty open, and there are lots of different ideas and options for that street. And so I think at this point, I think we can bring forward a discussion. It's just a matter of exactly what gets included in it. So I think I should just keep council abreast of where we're at with what we think we will include in that discussion. And if we feel that we need some direction to bring forward a certain component, then I'll certainly talk that through a little bit more.
Okay, sounds good. And hope I didn't mess that up.
No, not at all.
Okay. I was a little fuzzy on where we left that. So thank you for that. Okay. So then we don't need any action there. And I did want to give everybody just a quick heads up that the graduation banner project is just finishing up, and those banners will be going up next week. So we will be painting the town both blue and gold and gray and red this year, because we are including Lopez High. So that will be really neat. And I will be posting a little bit later specifics on exactly when, because the community came out last time and it was really, really cool for our crews who were up on the lifts and getting them up there, and people were honking and waving and taking pictures of them. And our crews don't often get that kind of interface with our community. So that's a really fun piece of what we're doing. So that will be next week, most likely Tuesday. So, with that takes us to the closed session, which we have none here, but we did have earlier, which takes us to item 15, adjournment. So we'll see you all in 2 weeks, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.